On this week's show, datatization in construction with Matt Huddleston from Inertia Systems.
Construction is the world's oldest industry, but spends the least amount of money on innovation. When we realized people outside the construction industry didn't typically associate construction with technology like virtual reality, apps, and robotics, we started the Contech Crew. Each week, we bring our listeners the latest in Contech news and interview the minds behind the technological innovations changing the way we build. So strap in, enjoy the ride, and geek out. It's Contech Crew time.
All right, Jacob, back on the show, back in the studio. How you feeling, man?
Doing good. I'm excited for this one. I got a little surprise for you guys when we get to the news. Won't give too much away, but I'll just say keyword digital twin. So
I'm digging this datatization. That's right. If you listen to the intro there, you probably don't know the word. We'll get to that later in the show. But it was not digitization. It was not digitalization. It was datization. And I love good new words. And our guest, Matt Huddleston, brought that to us. So, Matt, where are you coming to us from today?
Hey, how's it going? Thanks for having me on. I'm coming out of San Diego today.
Home office.
We're all remote. So working out of the home, you might hear noises in the background.
Hey, that's how we like it. Perfectly 70 degrees and nice out, I hope. Yeah, that's what we always get from there. Listen, guys, you know we're back on YouTube, so check us out. Hit that subscribe button, youtube.com/@TheContechCrew. Do me a favor and check out those shorts, too. I love that new team. I love what we're putting out. I love these co-hosts. It's great stuff, great guests. So check it out for us.
Are you trying to reach the innovators and decision makers in construction technology? Then look no further than sponsoring the Contech Crew. That's right, we're taking new advertisers. Email us at advertising@thecontechcrew.com to learn more.
So Matt, currently founder of Inertia Systems, but tell us how you got here. How'd you get to where you are today?
Long and windy story. Started Inertia 2010, home project. We used to run some businesses out of our home, built technology, self-sufficient, doing great. Had some family in construction, California Healthcare, exactly, Oshkosh specifically, and they were inspectors. And they knew that we built tech, and so they came and asked if we can help. And I said, I don't even know your space. I don't know construction. You know, I don't know what you do. Teach me. And so they taught me what I have been told and still consider one of the more complex construction deliveries, California Healthcare, just the regulations and compliance requirements on top of the density and sophistication of the buildings. There's a lot to do. And more importantly, in that condition, there's a lot to track, prove, and verify. And so the way he presented this problem to me was, listen, the state's really rigorous in compliance and they come and check everything. And I mean everything. And the way they ensure they're doing their job right is they will spot check you. They will randomly show up, randomly walk a million square foot building and just point at something and say, show me you did this right. Show me it's to code. Show me it's to the drawings. Show me it's to specification. Show me you've tracked your issues, you've resolved them. Prove to me you've built this thing I'm randomly choosing correctly. And that was a hard thing to do. And so when I asked them, how can we help? What would be a better solution for you? They said, it'd be really great if I just had a map that wherever they walk in my building, I can flip to that page and whatever they point at, I can tap on it. And if I can tap on it and show them all my answers, everything they just asked for, they'll see that we're doing our job right and they'll go bother another project. And so that's sort of how we started with Inertia. It was this concept of location-based tracking. That's the term you use then. Still use it now because it's sort of relevant. It's the locational context to where you're in the building. And more specifically, what is impacting those things that are locationally relevant to you. So that's how Inertia got kicked off. We helped them do compliance for healthcare in California. But since this concept of location-based tracking, and you're going to hear me interchange this word a lot. In fact, when I attended one of your conferences, workshops, location was a big concept there. And, you know, it's personal to us. It's all we really do. It's interchangeable with objects and how you use this. So location, object, asset, equipment, materials, they're all the same. And so when you learn how you can interchange these words and still be talking about the same thing, it's really critical. And so we got this location-based concept up and running through these interactive maps. And it's now expanding to all different types of construction. It's proving to be a very efficient and effective project management concept.
That's awesome. Cause we at 2010 to be thinking about locations way ahead of the curve. And I imagine actually took a lot of bumps and bruises to get there because it was, there was a lot of other things to even be thought about. In 2010, that was pre me being in the industry, to be honest. It was like a couple years, 2 years before I got into the industry. And when I got in, we were still talking about, time cards, daily reports. Just all sorts of real basic workflows. So that's an advanced workflow to start with. But I have experience in the California healthcare industry, and you're right. It's unique and difficult. Also really innovative. I think that's a key to it too, right?
That's one of the neat things about it. It's like constraint forces art, or solutions. And so what was really neat about it is, the budgets, although they do bid higher for these buildings, you still have a lot more to do. You have a little bit more team, a little bit more allowance for technology, but there's a lot more problems you have to solve for. And the teams are forced to get creative and innovative and a little more advanced from a solution perspective. Not anything flies, so you got to make sure you're doing the thing that will get approved in the most efficient or profitable way possible. And, it's a tricky challenge. It's always interesting too when I go to other jurisdictions that don't have these regulations. I'm like, well, we have this other little module here that helps you do XYZ. They're like, yeah, man, no, someone just comes out, they look once, sign the box, they're off and on their way. I'm like, okay, you don't need that. You're in a different world, different environment. It's a whole nother game.
And interesting too, to talk about how that sort of those constraints create innovation. The one thing we saw it on was like, that's where most of the IPD projects come from. Right. Like they adopted a different contract method really early on because with that amount of complexity and those constraints, they have to work as really well-oiled teams together. So again, that drives, we've seen a lot of technology adoption out of that as well, because again, when you get teams together, then all of a sudden you have this opportunity to be like, hey, listen, when I do this, it helps you do this, which helps you do this, which helps you do this. And all of a sudden you see it, which most teams are walled gardens and they don't want to talk to each other. So they're not actually seeing and experiencing those benefits, right? In the end, like, oh, wait, I did this early on and I digitized it. And now you're all the way out in the field verifying it with an inspector. And because you did and uploaded the specs and uploaded everything you could and gave it everything, now I'm just accessing it. And that person's like, tell me. Oh, no, you're out. Tell me. Okay. All right. Well, these guys got it. I'm out.
Early concepts, when I tell the story, is, there was a couple foundational concepts. One was BIM. And I read some early white papers from Autodesk in 2010, 2011. In 5 years, BIM will take over everything. So you can laugh. But it has made progress. The other one was an IPD project. So one of our earliest and biggest and most affected ones was an IPD joint venture here in California. And it went really well. But it's interesting because it creates a bias in my mind. BIM, in my mind, is a concept of collaboration. Different teams are coordinating to proactively prevent errors in the field. And IPD is similar. I summarize it as shared risk, shared reward, collaborative. All those walls are down. Everyone can benefit if they work as a team. And so when you put technology that can allow that concept and then a delivery methodology that can allow that concept, you can build a tool with different rules that can execute on that successfully. And what I've seen differentiators maybe is some tools were built to operate under more stringent guidelines. And when we take these tools to different markets or even different delivery methods, where it's like, I don't want them to see this. I don't want them to know, like, I want to use your tool to track my issues, but I don't want the other people to see it. And it's like, we like how it tracks, it'll help us close these out faster. We don't want them to know that our errors and our flaws. It's like, they'll feel great if they know you're tracking it and closing it. They'll probably even help you. And others don't do that because there's another game they're playing. Not a game they're playing, but another rules they're playing by.
Yeah, they're playing by a different set of rules. And I'll give this over to Jacob here, but I will help you in those others from a speaking their language. In the IPD world, it's shared risk, shared reward. In the rest of the world, it's shared pain, shared gains. So because they'll feel it, because it is the pain. It's the pain of the checklist. It's the pain of the punch list. It's the pain of getting off the job site. It's the pain of switching out a material because, you can't get it right now, or there's a long lead time on it or whatever. So yeah, shared pain, shared gains is what the rest of the world wants to do. And I don't know why people want to hurt so bad. It's just the way it is, I guess. But I love those IPD projects, and I love that shared risk, shared reward, because it does drive sort of everybody pulling in the same direction. And I know Jacob loves those things. So Jacob, what do you got for me, buddy?
It's not really as much as, you know, I want to hurt. It's just, I want somebody to hurt with me and be with me on it. So it's shared. So, you know, we're going to continue down that road. I think the other thing too is Jeff, actually another guest from the show, James Pease, actually introduced Matt and I, and he was one of the ones, he runs Lean IPD. And, you know, this is all kind of coming full circle as we're talking technology and collaboration. And it's actually amazing that the conversations were happening back in 2012. I remember collaborating then too, and it literally took 45 minutes to open the Revit model. So we would come in, hit open, go get our cup of coffee and start drinking it, wait for it. So the amount of like actual reward coming out of it has to be high. And the other thing too with Oshpod is your risks go up with Oshpod, because they are going to come out and actually point and see everything, that you do have like this layer of quality control that you have to have now. You know, you can't get away with it. You can't just cut a little corner here and there, because that might actually hurt you in the long run. So whatever the last, like, I would say you're talking early 2010s here. What about like the few years before COVID? How did you start seeing any of that type of gathering? And like, did you start seeing acceleration in all this?
We started early. We were basically a bootstrapped operation. Friends and family made this get up and going, and we sold enough early on to survive ourselves. So we were profitable for years, but we can never break through a certain threshold of scalability. And so what we ended up having to do finally, 2019, gave into raising some funds to make the technology go farther, faster. And right when we finally secured our funding and built the team and got an office and did this whole routine, COVID hit. And so here's what a little more background on Inertia. Because we were Oshpod sort of specific or known anyway, kind of classified, known as this solution for California, it was very limiting. This solution worked for all construction. It just started in this space. And to expand out into other space, we had to sort of reposition ourselves in the market. And as we were starting to do that, the goal was, hey, let's keep serving Oshpod while we retool our tools for the whole industry. And then COVID hit. And then it was like, oh, all of our Oshpod projects literally stopped. All the hospitals were flooded with patients, all the future construction, even though there was massive projects planned. I was like, oh, this can be great for us. And I was wrong, because everyone just froze construction because no one was quite certain when it came to healthcare construction, like what to do, how to navigate it. So we sort of hit like a weird bumpy patch there where it's like, well, our bread and butter historically has paused and we're not quite ready to chase the new stuff. And it was a really interesting dynamic for us to get through. Fortunately, we had raised money so we could get through that bumpy patch, but it definitely changed trajectory, paths, and all that kind of stuff. It did shine a light on how people can manage their projects better remotely. And so like I remember specifically a massive project in Riverside, you know, huge billion-dollar hospital, little things like efficiency where you can only get four people in the elevator at once. And it's, you're talking like 16 stories. So just the loss of getting the right people on the right level at the right time, not only are they parking far, walking to the job site, but now just getting to the level they have to work on, they're just wasting time all day long. Architects would come out and, you know, if they go to the wrong room, they're wasting time doing punch. Like so many people just getting to where they had to get. And so when you have technology that could capture information from the field and convey it remotely more efficiently, teams could do better work from the trailer, from the job site, or across the country. And so in ways that brought some of what, you know, object-based tracking and remote connection to the field benefits. It sort of put a spotlight on how we should be able to do things better remotely from a distance, which lends itself to the technology, a lot of future technologies that are coming out, ours being one of them. I could talk more about that.
Well, I want to go back. First of all, I'd love a good shout out to James Pease. He taught me a lot about IPD. One of the early IPD folks that I met in the process, and really enjoy his blog. If guys don't check it out, go check it out. It's worth it. And you hit on a few things that COVID shifted the healthcare model completely for a period of time. And it's still, we're seeing the impacts of it. I didn't realize this, but during that process also, a lot of doctors took early retirement, right? So now the healthcare system is having some of the similar issues that we're having with a lot of that knowledge went out the door and you're bringing in new doctors and whatnot. So we have these new doctors, and I'm interested because these tool sets don't just help us today. They're helping us tomorrow. And I want to see what your thoughts are on it.
Okay, we'll go back to the beginning. So BIM solved for a lot of this. This concept of a model, building information model, objects, then you go from that to 3D geometry. How do you clash detect? Okay, we solved one problem. What else can you solve with it? So data structure matters. BIM sort of defined great concepts for data structure. There's no perfect fixed standard, but the structure started. Now, where you can go further with that, with this like aging workforce, replacement, knowledge capture, knowledge share, tribal knowledge lost if that person leaves the job site, concepts like that. How you capture knowledge is critical, but more important, how others can access it is more critical. There's a lot of tools and a lot of companies that have created knowledge bases that aren't accessible. It was just like a submittal. If you can't find the submittal when you need it, is it really helpful? If you find it 30 minutes later, you can't answer your question. You got to go look it up, call that person back. They're context shift. They're in another state of mind. It's not as relevant when you don't have it when you need it. And so the idea now is when you set up the right data structure for a project, and you accumulate your data in a more processed way, you can actually access it very effectively when you actually need it, like on the spot. And so not to pitch product, but the idea with object-based tracking is you learn something about an air handler unit. Well, next time you go to install an air handler unit, regardless of who's on your team or how long they've been there, all they got to do is tap on that thing and say, hey, what do we know about this? Where has this gone right? Where has this gone wrong? This model, this serial number, like where have we had successes and failures? And how can we navigate this product this time most effectively? And when you can simply, hey, what am I working on today? I'm working on this stuff. Okay, click on it. Okay, this is what we need to know. This is what other teams have contributed. Now you access it quick and you benefit from that lesson that's been logged and learned, and you don't have to repeat that step. I'll pause there to say big shout out to James Peace as well. That dude is awesome, sharp. He's trying to do what he did successfully in private, bring it to public. And I'm sure there are challenges. He has shared that there are more challenges doing it in public, but I think he's having success on his projects. And it's really neat to see someone try to make a change for the positive. And he's doing that. But concepts of lean are also found like fundamental in what we do. Non-value-adding steps. Okay, a non-value-adding step is when you're repeating the same mistake multiple times or just not getting an efficiency gain from a previous person's efforts. And going back to PDFs, that's one of the worst cases of non-lean practices there can be. You have a model that has solved so many problems. It's created all these beautiful drawings. They can do so much from a data perspective, but you literally delete the data when you export it to a PDF. It just becomes a picture. Our running joke, PDF stands for pretty dumb format. It's just a dumb picture. It doesn't do anything for you unless you draw on it and make it smarter. And so the idea now is if you're trying to capture lessons learned, if you're working on a PDF and you're drawing a cloud and you're trying to say, well, this cloud means this to me, I hope it means it to you, and it's representing this object, and I hope I wrote and typed it correctly, and I hope you catalog this, no one's ever going to find it again. And so first, you've lost efficiency when you went from BIM to PDF because all your data is gone. You have to extra steps to add it back in. And then you're capturing lessons, extra steps to make it relevant to anybody else. And so there's so many just efficiency losses there that you can pick up with datatization, data, object-driven project management. So when you organize around a data structure that's predetermined and you insert information as you go in the place it's supposed to go and you're ready for it from day one, everyone can build on each other's efforts instead of starting over every step of the way. And so it's a huge shift, but it's that IPD, lean, BIM, tie those all together, you can have a pretty powerful solution.
To go back to your original point of collecting is just the first step.
Yes.
The last step is democratization, getting it to people. And we've said this from the beginning. You know, I go all the way back to original host Josh Bone saying the true power of BIM is the democratization of the data model itself to everyone. I mean, at that point in time, I don't think he called it a data model. I'm not going to put those words in his mouth. At that point, he democratization of the model was, to the people. And we've really seen that as we've understood that it's a data model underneath, that data model is driven by change. It has lots of pieces and parts and getting it there. And I love the air handler thing because so many times we're out, doing an installation of some sort or having a question of some sort. And we have to fall back on a level of knowledge that we have and do what we have to do. We find out later we did it wrong.
Yeah.
Right. And what's the number one problem with all of construction? If we really wanted to bring down the cost of construction, it's rework.
Rework.
Rework, rework, rework. And so that democratization and having it at your fingertips is key.
I'll pivot there. Let's blend this into kind of what we were leading in. We were talking off camera a little bit, the traffic and in the flow and in maps. What I was saying earlier, and I'll repeat it again real quick, is this concept of paper maps. Paper maps, you know, they've worked forever. They'll always work, but they're not the most efficient. Paper map will never tell you if there's traffic on the road, if the road is closed, or if there's a speed trap right at the bottom of the hill. You don't know those things until you get there, and by then it costs you something. You know, contrast, you have modern mapping tech. You get crowdsourced data, real-time data from all the other people sharing your experience. Pretend that's a project. Everyone's sharing information in the same environment. It helps. The speed traps on a job site are the potential rework. If there's an RFI that's changing something and that thing is being installed 10 times and no one knows about it, that's the ticket on the road that's costing you time and money. You should have known about it. If an alert popped up, you would have done it differently. But that's, how do we connect data? How do we communicate data so that our teams can be more informed, more efficient, more proactive? And so that's the concept of, you know, this object-driven, information-driven data model. You can forecast to people what's going on their specific project. It's their constraints, their environment, their objects, their world. And now you're just connecting all the dots for them and then throwing up the alerts where they need to see them. Now you can avoid the rework. You make back that contingency budget, or you preserve it as best you can. It's a huge, huge difference.
Absolutely. That's where BIM always wanted to get to, that concept, right? But BIM was always contained within an environment of the one team. So it was the design team, and it wasn't given anybody.
Lack of accessibility too.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
And that's where, you know, basically trying to push that data out, get it out. Platforms have taken control over this. I mean, like the idea of ACC and Procore has tried to really, how do we get this access to them? But to your point, the PDF is basically taking that paper map, drawing on it, taking a picture of it, and then that's what you're using to get your directions. Where there's a value prop, you don't have to carry around a paper map anymore, but it doesn't do anything for you. So I think this is really cool, and especially since, you know, we've had conversations about knowledge retention and lessons learned, and how do we, you know, really ensure that this is going back and forth. The object-based idea is the absolute, like, golden goose egg at the end. The idea that each object can actually represent a database of its own and have information history on it that you can leverage and then people can use across anywhere is almost like a data model or a data twin.
And you can pivot through it and around it. And so data twin, digital twin is defined a lot of different ways by a lot of different people, but there's common threads here. So BIM model is your data structure. You're organizing information around objects. So I always take a step back and say, okay, what is it? It's a million objects. Those objects take shape over the course of construction, just like the building itself. There's a million objects, 1,000 of those are structural steel, you know, a couple hundred are concrete, sequence pours, and then, you know, it's doors, windows, framing, MEP, et cetera, et cetera. It takes shape in 3D, and then you clash detect it. It takes shape in 2D, which is eventually a drawing, hopefully a smart drawing like we produce. But then it takes shape with the submittal process and specifications. What specifically does it have to be? So that's another further attribute on that object. And then what's the procurement process? What's the lead time? How do we plan for it accordingly? Maybe you're comparing two different products. One has short lead time, one has long lead time, or one's cheaper, one's more expensive. But what was the results of that choice? Maybe the cheaper one showed up late and caused delays. Well, if you don't factor all that into the whole profitability of the project, it can impact future choices. So when we say lessons learned, it's not just lessons learned to avoid certain mistakes. It's lessons learned to avoid and optimize all things going forward, to iteratively improve based on your experiences and the data you've captured. And so if a product was cheaper, you procured it faster, but it caused a lot of delays, when you go to design the next building, do you order that product again? And do you even know that the product was the root cause of that delay? You can, if you connect all the information right. You could say, well, this RFI triggered this, this changed these things, it pushed the schedule this way. Schedule can link to object, RFI can link to object, procurement and lead time can link to object. All this data is about the building. So that's one of the different things we do from like some of the other platforms. First, take a project perspective. What's the project? The project's the building. The building is objects. You start with that structure first, and you add to it every step of the way as you go, building upon the previous steps, learning what worked and what didn't. So the next time you build it, we work with big companies that are serial builders and will build the exact same building again the next time, maybe with a different team though. What have we learned from the previous one in a way we could share with the new team, different company? Lessons through objects can be shared. Lessons across companies often don't. But an owner can organize a catalog of performance and results on these objects and impact future choices to continue to improve and learn more. So it all builds on itself instead of starting over.
Well, yeah, and to go back to sort of your James piece and your Lean and IPD pieces, that's the key to that process too, is that what Lean and IPD or Lean IPD wants to do together is solve the decisions at the right time. Because like you said, like you're not going to get switchgear to be getting here any faster, right? You can go through a bunch, but really we just know switchgear takes that long to get here, right? So that opportunity has to present itself at the right moment so that the team can make the decision, but also understand that we're making this decision based on the data that says this will cause us delays in the future. No, it's not actually, if you were to perfectly design the workflow of how to design a building, it's not going to be the switchgear choice at that point in time, but it is based on the material and the need and lead times to get it. And we don't do a really good job, and I'm going to sort of tease the news later, is we don't do a really good job of knowing the future and really being prepared to adapt to things that are going to impact our supply chain, things we learned during COVID and things we're about to learn here in this process. So it's a critical component to making great decisions, because that's part of that lean process, right? It's just enough, just in time delivery. And it works really, really well to deliver.
It's a hard word to market around, but I've heard it at different conferences, certainty, project certainty. Like, what can we plan around? And I want to weave this into the other conversation we were having too about, you know, the autonomous driving. The reason that the autonomous driving can work on the roads is that zipper effect. If computers can predict computers, they can all weave together and go in a predictable pattern. It's predictable, so they can predict each other and get there in the most efficient way. One of the lessons I learned in our delivery of software and working with the GC is they were asking for a new feature and we were building it, and they're like, okay, when's it going to be ready? And we gave a date, and what the GC, and I think we were early, and not always, sometimes we're late, often we're late, but this one we were early, but either way we were early. And the GC actually said, like, hey, I don't need it early. I don't need it late. I need it when you said it would be here, because our schedule, everything else plans around that happening when it's supposed to happen. So early is no benefit. Late definitely messes us up. On time is what we need. And so it's the concept of certainty that can drive project success, that predictability. And so when you can link information in a way that adds to the predictability or adds to the certainty of a project outcome, you'll never be perfect, but you see that your rates can increase, and then you can better forecast or better adapt to changing, you know, climate.
Yeah, it's a huge piece to be able to have the predictability. It's funny because there's very few in the world that understand that the way construction does, because it's very different. Like, delivering software early, that's just like a bonus to us, right? There's not a lot of inherent cost, but delivering a material early, then I got to store it. Where am I going to hold it? How am I going to handle it before it gets there? Is it going to take up space on my job site? Like, I think probably in the end, you're like, wait, guys, this is a digital delivery. Like, okay, you don't have to use it till that day, but we're ready for you to use it that day. It doesn't cost you anything and you don't have to lay it down. But yeah, we're early. So it's kind of funny to see that bleed over into what we do between software and the physical world, which is cool. But I'm going to take this, I don't want to call it a contrarian view, but there's one thing I've heard consistently in this industry is everything we've talked about works great for these knowledge workers and et cetera, but the field does not trust what we do. That is why they print the paper map out, right? Which is the drawing, right? And the cut for where they're going. Because holding it in their hand, they trust it and they know how to navigate it. Right, wrong, or indifferent. So how has that played into your thought process, and what have you seen along that way?
Okay, so there's a couple things you need to do to be successful as a software, at least from what I understand the industry to be. And one, easy to use in the field, easy to adopt, not intimidating. Two, no one wants another login. There's a lot of different concepts here. Interface has to be accessible. So what we've done at Inertia, and I don't want to pitch product too much, but I do want to talk about this concept because it's really critical. BIM is for, you know, quote unquote, the knowledge workers or that iron shop. But what I'll often say is, if you have 100 people on a project ratio wise, maybe five people know how to navigate 3D, but 100 people know how to navigate drawings. And so one of our sneaky tricks was, okay, BIM is the data structure we talked about. The waste is when you cut it to a PDF and hand it off. But why do we go to PDF? Well, just what you said, it's accessible. It's what we've always used. It's non-intimidating. We know how to navigate it. We know how to get to it. It's contextually relevant. The locations, it's visual. What we did is said, okay, BIM is too hot. 3D is too hot. PDF is too cold. Intelligent construction drawings is just right. When you can deliver a data structure of BIM, the functionality, promise, and opportunity through the format or presentation of a drawing, you're getting the best of both worlds. So now what you have is a field team that can access this to do what they do on a daily basis already anyway, just better, faster, smarter. And it drives and feeds. Now we're building upon each other again, the BIM process. So now the quote unquote knowledge workers or everyone does their job. They're all specialists. So everyone's super critical and they can't really replace each other. It's an ecosystem that requires each other to be successful. But different people have different perspectives and different needs. But there is common threads that everyone can access. It's the objects that they're building. BIM represents the building. Field workers work on the building. They're working on the objects of the building. When those objects come to life, when it's the common data environment or the common connection point, the golden thread, whatever term we want to use, it's where people can find that common ground. And so when the drawing carries the technology and the data and the information and field users, 100 of them can open it and access it, now it's like that Google map where everyone's contributing just enough to make everyone else benefit and be smarter and build upon each other. So you're right. And that's why I think we have a successful strategy. We are putting the technology in the drawing that people rely on every day to do most of what they do. They just get a whole heck lot of more of their effort when they do it through an ICD.
We approach the digital twin the same exact way. And when we look at facilities, and I'm going to take this from construction and what they're doing in the construction side to facilities and how they're looking at building data, we want to give the user the ability to find the correct information about an object or an asset. The way they do it can happen in a multitude of ways, and it's going to be the most effective solution for them to find that information. So they can go to an asset table and they can find that asset in just a line in a table. They can go to a 3D model and they can kind of walk around, or they're used to a plan. Let's go click on some, or a one line diagram. Like, these are things that all of them produce the same end result. You get the same information about the asset in all those routes, but then you are more comfortable using the product, being able to access it, being able to do it, where you're not losing individuals on the process.
Yes, I agree with what you're saying. And so, like, when it's the same object, so it's a database ID. Mm-hmm. And whether you're getting it in a grid, a line, whether you're getting it in a 2D object on multiple sheets, or whether it's a 3D object in a model, it's the same thing. And mm-hmm. So as long as you can get to the thing in the format or presentation you're most comfortable in, you can be successful. Field typically is more comfortable accessing things through drawings. And so when you give them, that's been the major disconnect of datatization, digital twin, and BIM catching on. This is where I think we'll have a big breakthrough in the industry as a company, but also more importantly for the industry. There's a big gap between what the design side can do and what facility management wants to do in concepts of digital twin. The gap is construction. Where and why aren't we leveraging data? Well, the why is PDF drawings. There's no data on the drawing. And so when you just fix that little gap and bridge it, now you're enhancing information across the entire process and it flows to facility management. And it continues to be an accessible format that gives you what you need. And so I'm definitely speaking our product, not trying to pitch it too hard, but the idea is anybody who does this well accomplishes what they're trying to get done. Now, when an owner wants digital twin, I think they just want to know about everything in their building, the whole story. And so why did they choose that door? We thought it was this. Why did it change? Well, click the door and let's learn about it. But they did say this one. It turned out the sound requirement wasn't right or the fire rating wasn't right. So we had to change it to this one and they ordered this product and it took this long. And now they have that whole story of decisions that were made and they can either agree with them or change them, but they'll know everything about their building and anyone can walk in, open a map, click on it and know.
Yeah, well, real quick, Jeff, the switch gear story you told earlier, I had a director of facilities. They built a new building. His design construction team built it. They did it on target value design and they got it built. They put in Tyson Krupp elevators instead of cone. all their other buildings have cone. They had to go purchase a new maintenance contract to come just to that one building. And that's kind of information that if they had back in the design phase and when they're buying it out, yeah, cone might have been more expensive. But now you have a whole nother maintenance contract going down the line of having to do this.
You hit it. Total cost of ownership, right? It's a total cost of ownership. And, you know, Matt, to take your kind of concept and take it from sort of where you're looking at on the product, I introduced this last year as I started to watch what I think is we're about on this cusp of things to start to really click, not just because of some of the innovations, but just some of the maturity of the industry and its knowledge. And I'll be honest, some of the pressures. I believe that in 2025 to 2026, the idea of the right person, the right place at the right time is going to be the critical component. That all of these systems and platforms are going to have to work together in such a way that I don't care if my tool in the field is this. I still need to get my information from what the tool sets and the tooling is in the back office here. I don't care if you're in purchasing, it's going to have to tell you at the right time. Like, and it's going to have to be in the system that you're most comfortable in, because to again connect back to a lean philosophy is when I switch from system to system, there is a break in my flow. And when you break my flow, you break my productivity. So if you can, and this is where I push on everyone in the industry that's listening, like, there is no one ring to rule them all. I'm really sorry for all of you that you don't get to win, but I'm really happy for you because you all get to be bigger together. Yep. If you can do it. So if you're building and designing in Revit and you're using ACC, but you're Procoring in the field,
yep,
those things need to flow. And if you're using none of those in the actual, so you're for Procoring on the construction side, and then you're actually using something else in the field, say Inertia Systems in the field, that information needs to flow seamlessly, because actually then what's going to happen is it's going to push everybody to utilize the tools more. And then that's what gets everybody to win. And, you know, the concept has come from some of the more nuanced point solutions out there that solve really important problems, but that we have realized themselves, well, yeah, I'm a nice to have, but if I can do this in these other systems, I'm beyond that. I'm a must have. And I think that's the critical component, man.
So that was the piece I left out earlier. If you're going to be successful as a software in this space, I think integrations are key. So don't compete, integrate, you know, extend and embrace that whole concept. Because like you said, a major GC is, even if they're not happy with their choice of a solution, shifting is not always an option, or shifting is not an immediate option. And so if you want to maybe be successful or grow faster, how you can embrace the value proposition of those tools, integrate with it and extend it through your solution, you can be a lot better off a lot faster. What I would say on the datatization, maybe controversial, maybe not, a lot of the big platforms solved problems, but the problems they solved were single sign-on. So instead of going to 20-point solutions to do 20 different things, I go to one solution to do 20 different things. But in that one solution doing 20 different things, they didn't have the thread that connected all those things efficiently. So you did get a massive efficiency gain. It's sort of a source of truth to a degree. You know where to log in to find your answers, but finding your answers is tough. And So if we talk about what's going to make us successful overall, it's organization of your answers, not just single source to search. It's how is it organized? How is it structured? How is it going? And most of what needs to happen is happening already. People are already doing things in tools, but they're not having an organization structure in advance of it when they do it. I've gone to so many projects where they're reinventing the wheel. Like, oh, we got it covered with these three platforms, but we have no idea how we're going to track XYZ. And we're going to go to spreadsheets or a smart sheet or this or that, and we're just going to start over and, you know, then repeat again at the next project. Instead of solving the problem of know what you need to do in advance, set up a structure to capture it, connect all those things. So we have a really great integration with Procore. And what we do is we connect Procore data through objects, through drawings. So not only do we deliver value as an isolated solution, but when we integrate with Procore, for example, on Procore projects, we bring all of their information into our objects as well. So one user can go to one drawing, click one object, see things from multiple sources. Now it's efficient. They're getting the best of both, and they're actually getting an extended value because our data complements the Procore data, vice versa. We're working to integrate with more, but integration is key. And I'll go back to the beginning. The objects, the data structure of the objects is that common thread that can tie all the platforms together to make teams more successful. So there's a lot of space for a lot of players to do a lot of point things, integrate in and around the objects.
And that is the mic drop moment. That was awesome. I love it because you're right. Go back to the object, go back to the data. I love this idea of datatization. We're going to give you credit for that one. So Matt, you get credit for that, but you may hear it on a stage near you. And we always give credit. We're on a stage near you. Keep a lookout for us on the road. Matt, it was great to sit down with you, man.
Hey, thanks for having me. This was awesome.
Yeah, it was long overdue and it's great to have you. Jacob, as always, it's awesome to sit down with you and have a great chat.
Of course. Thanks, guys.
And thank you for tuning in today to geek out for our interview with Matt Huddleston. To read all our news stories, learn more about our guests, and to listen to this show, visit thecontechcrew.com. This is The Contech Crew signing out. Until next time, enjoy the ride and geek out.